Saturday was a spectacular day. There's no doubt about it. Padres debut of Luis Arraez in the lineup, and you just couldn't have asked for anything more. Four hits in his first four at-bats, and the Padres go on to a 13-1 win over the Arizona Diamondbacks. What a great first impression, not only for Arraez, but you know, for Padres fans to get to see Arraez for the first time and get that full gamut of what he's able to do, starting with the double down the right field line. Do we have all the calls? This is great.
Listen to the double. You can hear Jesse's voice. He's like laughing. He's like, well, what more could you ask for?
Here's the 1-0 from Fought, and Arraez rips it down the right field line. A base hit headed towards the corner. McCarthy over to dig it out. It's going to be extra bases, and Arraez standing at second with a double. The second pitch he sees in his Padre debut.
Love it. Absolutely love it.
That's
a double.
I thought his third hit, the one where he just stuck his wrists out and flicked it over the third baseman's head, though. That's the one that reminded me the most of Tony Gwynn and his ability to do that against top pitching. And a lot of comparisons were made with Tony Gwynn. It's unfair to both Arraez and Tony Gwynn to make those comparisons, but I think it's accurate what Fernando Tatis Jr. said. He is the most Tony Gwynn-like player in baseball today. It doesn't mean he is Tony Gwynn, and it doesn't mean he's ever going to put up the kind of historic numbers that Tony Gwynn did or make it to the Hall of Fame, but he's got two batting titles. He's the only guy, you know, in major modern-day baseball that really consistently hits over 300 nowadays, which is so rare to see. So, yes, he is the modern-day Tony Gwynn. Now, modern-day baseball is not Tony Gwynn-style baseball anymore, but he clearly is the guy who does it the most like Tony Gwynn did it during his career. I think Gwynn had obviously some, you know, I think defensively, Tony Gwynn was a much better player, especially as his career went on. Base running, just all around, he was a Hall of Fame player. We saw Luis Arraez when he played yesterday. There were a couple of balls that, they weren't errors, but I think they're balls that Xander Bogaerts probably gets when he's out there. And if Ha-Sung Kim was out there at second, plays that he makes fairly easily that Luis Arraez simply doesn't do. He's not much of a threat on the base paths to steal. So he's not Tony Gwynn, but he is the most Tony Gwynn-like player that's out there, and his skill bat-to-ball is something to behold. It is precious, it is rare, and it is very exciting to watch as a fan.
That is just what a debut, number one. What a first impression. So I texted our pal, Skip Schumacher, his now former manager, and he was legitimately bummed. And he said, you guys got one of my favorite players I've ever been around. Love that kid. He can play first, DH, second, left. It's going to give guys days off. It will also really lengthen your lineup. This guy is Tommy Pham work ethic. Winner, gamer. He hit 350 in 180 games here. It's pretty bananas that he was available. Torey Lovullo, after the game, actually said, I was surprised he was available. Like, and I know it's been something that's been in the works for quite a while. AJ's had his eye on him. And Peter Bendix, I think, in my opinion, probably got a little bit spooked. He probably did, knowing the Marlins aren't going anywhere. And you run the risk of not getting a package like that back, a package that his analysts considered a great deal, had to jump at it, a package that, by all accounts, from in not just homers like us, people around baseball that I really trust their opinions, they went, oh, yeah, this is a really good deal for the Padres. Then you throw in the money on top of it, A+. As I said, A+ grade here.
One thing that AJ Preller does deserve credit for is that, unlike many other people in baseball, including his fellow general managers, he's not bound by what is usually done. He is always willing to explore the unconventional, the trade that other teams aren't even thinking about right now. Well, you can't trade for a superstar in May. That's just not how it's done.
Yeah, we don't do it
AJ
like that.
AJ just says, why not? Why not? Let's try and make it possible. I always wonder, what are the moves he has made, what are the hundreds that he didn't make that we never heard about? That
Jose
he was
Ramirez,
going down the,
Francisco Lindor,
the road on. Yeah. I mean, he is always willing to explore the different ways to make the team better.
And look, man, and
does he succeed every time?
No. I saw the argument this weekend, and made by some of the usual suspects, and I don't know that they're necessarily wrong. You know, the constantly bringing in superstar after superstar after superstar may not be the best way to build a team. That's how you want to build your fantasy team. You want that's exactly how I run my fantasy. I want to bring in all the best players I can, no matter the cost, no matter the trades, whatever I got to do. I want to bring in the best players. It's different. It's not. There's makeup involved. There is cohesion, chemistry. Does he actually fit in the lineup? Does he have a position to play?
Seen it backfire before.
Am I going to have to move him to a different position, right? But a guy that can play three to four positions, albeit not at the top level defensively, I get you. I absolutely understand that. But to bring in a guy and a guy that wants to be here, same agency as Manny and Fernando. Did I read that right? He's they all share an agent. Yeah, that's kind of cool. That is to me, like I said, A plus. I don't think Jacob Marcy's ever going to hit 30 bombs in the show. I don't think Mortarella's going to hit 30 bombs in the show. I don't think Wusuk Go maybe even sees the big leagues. Dylan Head potentially. You know, what is his ceiling? Great. We'll see in 5 years. But for now, when you have superstars on your roster that are day by day getting a little bit older, you got to go for it. And he's going for it. So
build up the farm system and trade back for Dylan Head in 4 years if you want him again.
The other thing is, and I don't know how many times he needs to do it for us to believe in it, he has zero problem restocking the farm. None. Not even a little bit. There's not even a down year. That's one thing you can say about A.J. Preller. The ability he has to replenish and restock the farm is unparalleled. Okay, so while you might not agree with every single move, there's guys I look around the big leagues and go, man, God, he would have been so great here had we given him a shot, had we developed him properly. There's one on every team, seemingly, you know. But at the end of the day, what do you hear about? You hear about Leo DeBrees, you hear about Ethan Salas, you hear about Snelling and Lasko and all these guys. These guys, we didn't know these guys a couple years ago. He has no problem doing that. That's one of his greatest strengths.
While Arraez got most of the attention on Saturday, there is one other player I do want to praise. First, though, we need a contestant for Take on Woods. 833-288-0973, head-to-head versus Woods, our musical trivia challenge coming up in about 3 minutes. So call now, get online, 833-288-0973. We have a unique prize just for this week for Take on Woods contestants.
It's like instant gratification, though. That's
very
good.
Instant gratification. 833-288-0973. Arraez deservedly got the lion's share of the attention on Saturday. I want to give a little bit of praise to Jurickson Profar, who came and was done everything that he's been asked. You know, signed for $1 million, probably going to be a part-time player. We need you every day. Go out there. Play well every single day. You were the best offensive player the Padres have had over the first month of the season. They need you to hit leadoff. You move to the leadoff spot and you produce there. Jurickson Profar had a 2-run home run on Saturday, but did say after the game that, honestly, I love hitting fifth. He said, I do love hitting fifth. Now, you would have never known that with how happily he moved to the leadoff spot when he changed. He didn't complain about it when they asked him to do it, but he said, I am so happy we have Arraez now, because now I can drop back, because I love hitting fifth in the order. And he went, and he produced again.
Serves like a leadoff hitter in the five hole, halfway through your lineup.
The guy doesn't miss a beat right now. He just doesn't miss a beat, and he always does it with a good, smiling, but healthy, competitive attitude. I mean, if you could put Jurickson Profar's personality into just about every baseball player, I think that would probably be a positive for just about everyone.
An elite team. And you can't talk about Saturday, too, without talking about Michael King, who was outstanding.
Correct.
Six innings pitched, six hits, no runs, no walks, 3 Ks. Really, really
well. He doesn't
well
walk anybody.
Done.
He hasn't given up a home run. He'll be a
really
phenomenal
good
pitcher.
Yep.
Obviously, it's the walks and the home runs that have killed him when he's had the bad starts.
Manny, huge night, 3 RBI. Merrill, back on track, couple of hits that night. Hassan Kim drives in 4. That was about as good as you can draw it up.
Yeah, 3-run homer. I love Hassan Kim in the 9 spot. Yeah, I know he struggled a little bit, but no one wants to face Hassan Kim as a 9 hitter in Major League Baseball right now.
It's so stupid when you think about, well, we got all these guys. You add one guy to the lineup, and your lineup goes, it just pops right there. So, yeah, that was it was a sight to see. Saturday night, one of the more enjoyable Padres games I've ever seen.
Friday night was also a pretty good night. We'll get to that coming up an hour. Right now, though, we got some contestants on the line. Let's get to it. First game of the week. It is time for Take on Woods.
It's time for Take on Woods. Take
on Woods. Woods.
All right, let's get Dan on the line. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Great. How are you guys?
I'm good. All right, you are the contestant today. And here is, just for this week only, we've got the Instant Gratification Prize, our Vegas Grand Prize Contest. We're going to return next week. They're working on the details for a new one. But today, and this week only, if you can beat or tie Woods, we're just going to give you a $25 gift card to Carl's Jr. The El Diablo Burger is back at Carl's Jr. for eternity with a potato bun, charbroiled beef, a spicy habanero sauce, bacon, jalapeno popper bites, pepper jack cheese, and jalapenos. Try it now. I mean, who doesn't like a little Carl's Jr. for lunch? Dan, are you ready to get going here?
Yes, we are. We're fingers crossed.
You're a little stunned by the prize. I know it. All right, here are your categories. We've got the all 2 second song category, song and dance from the 80s. Those are songs that feature the word dance in the title from the 1980s. And now we're adding a second song and dance category. This one, song since the year 2000, also with dance in the title. So you got those two, or you can go with the Tortured Poets Department, which is our Taylor Swift new album category. But you don't actually need to know that much about the album to get some questions right in that one. So song and dance 80s. Song and dance since 2000, or the Tortured Poets Department. Dan?
All right, so here's the deal. My daughter and I listen every day as we're driving to school. Okay. She's 11, and she heard there was a Taylor Swift category, and we said that we got to try.
All right, good luck. If she wants to help you out in the 60 seconds, you are more than welcome to do it. The category today is the Tortured Poets Department. Since Taylor Swift continues to be on the news, let's focus on her new album today and Take on Woods. No 2 second song today. While every answer is the name to one of the 31 tracks she just released, as I said, you don't necessarily need to be a giant Swiftie to get these questions correct. Are you and your daughter ready, Dan?
I am. She's a little too nervous to be ready, but we're going to try.
That's all right. All right, 60 seconds on the clock. Your time begins when I start reading the first question. Good luck, Dan. Let's Take on Woods. Featuring Post Malone, the first track on the album is which term that describes a 2 week period?
Fortnite.
Correct. Track 8, featuring Florence from Florence and the Machine, features which Sunshine State name followed by 3 exclamation points?
Florida.
Correct. Track 15 is named after which medieval pseudoscience concerned with the attempt to turn base metals into gold?
Alchemy.
Correct. Track 19 shares a name with which golf term that is a synonym for a double eagle?
Albatross?
Correct. The title of track 30 is which type of bird, or the first name of the actress who married Mike Tyson in 1988?
I don't know. You know it? The bird? Sparrow.
Oh, good guess. Good 4 out of 5, though. Very well. That was Robin. Robin Givens was the actress who Mike Tyson married. You got the other ones, though. Fortnite, Florida, The Alchemy, The Albatross, and Robin. So hold on, Dan. You got your score.
Be a good score.
You got your score locked in. We'll see. Woods is a smart guy. He doesn't know any of these songs, I would imagine, but he's a smart guy. We'll see. All right, Dan's score is locked in. You can already taste the Carl's Jr. All right, no 2 second song today. No 2 second song today. And I do have to tell you, because you wouldn't have any idea otherwise, this is about Taylor Swift here. All right, 60 seconds on the clock. Your time begins when I begin reading the first question. Good luck, Woods. Let's take on Dan. Featuring Post Malone, the first track on her new album is which term that describes a 2 week period?
The Red Wave.
Incorrect. Track 8, featuring Florence from Florence and the Machine, features which Sunshine State name followed by 3 exclamation points?
Florida.
Correct. Track 15 is named after which medieval pseudoscience concerned with the attempt to turn base metals into gold?
Alchemy.
Correct. Track 19 shares a name with which golf term that is a synonym for a double eagle?
Albatross.
Correct. The track of title 30 is which type of bird, or the first name of the actress who married Mike Tyson in 1988?
Robin.
That is correct. Well, and you got four, which is a tie. But Dan and Dan and his daughter, congratulations. You have won the $25 Carl's Jr. gift certificate this week. Stay on the line. Great job by both of you. Paulie will get all your information during the break. So, yeah, that was five questions that you didn't actually need to know the album titles in order to get it.
Yeah, thank God.
Throw in a little bit of extra clues in there for
you.
Fortnite is the one you didn't get.
I was going to guess just Dear John or Shake It Off for everyone if
I
didn't know.
It's funny, though, Paulie, that when I asked him for a Sunshine State name,
he wanted to say Colorado.
He didn't say Colorado, that he said
because he knows what the Florida State nickname is.
You dig yourself in holes on the radio sometimes. It's funny.
You weren't committed to the bit.
After my rant at the end of the show on Friday about bunting, I realized the Padres executed a successful sacrifice bunt this weekend. Fantastic.
Jackson Merrill laid one down.
Great. Don't do it again. I come up yesterday in a very close game, late in the game, runners on first and second. The first baseman, my buddy Britt's like, oh, is he going to bunt? And in my mind, I go, you probably should bunt.
Be a smart move.
No, I swung away. I got a single. So
right.
A second. How about that? I mean, but you once
put
you,
your money where your mouth
that's
is.
That's it. Once you commit on the air to something, like you have to, I can't be the guy that hates bunting. Then gets up there, yes, he goes, bink, lays one down.
I mean, 4-4 tie and take on Woods today. It would have been, if you were so committed to the bid,
that it
you
would have lost. Yeah, if I would have said Colorado. So, yeah, I had to just go against my, my word. Sorry.
All right, we'll come back. We got more Padres talk on the way. Don't Do This is next. Did you see what happened in the Cardinals-White Sox game over the weekend?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Like, the biggest nightmare for fans, for players, for broadcasters, everyone possible in this game over the weekend. What a nightmare. Tell you about it next on Ben and Woods after traffic on 97.3 The Fan.
The worst thing ever.
Don't do this.
It's time for Don't Do This.
What were you thinking?
Three stories from the world of sports that make us all shake our heads.
Why?
How many times do I have to tell you?
Oh, I'm sorry, I fudged up, guys.
You idiot. You moron.
You dumbass.
The apple sometimes does far fall from the tree.
Don't do this.
Do not tweet that.
With Ben and Woods.
I like a Nickelback song or two.
On 97.3 The Fan.
The Dodgers are coming to town this Friday through Sunday. Let's turn out, support the Padres, create a true home field advantage. Limited tickets are available for all three Dodgers games at Padres.com/tickets. And to get us started today on Don't Do This, here is Stephen Woods.
Well, if you were a little Yankee fan going to Yankee Stadium to your first Yankee game and you got to see your hero, Aaron Judge, play, I'm really happy for you that you got in and got to see the work of Ryan Blakeney, because that's really what you paid for on Saturday when you went in to watch the Yankees play the Tigers, because Ryan Blakeney is the first and only Major League umpire to ever throw Aaron Judge out of a baseball game after 869 games. The Yankee captain was ejected for the first time in his career in the seventh inning. On a pitch away, looked like it might have nicked the zone. 3-2 count, kind of grinding up there. Close game, though. And Judge looked at it, kind of, you know, nodded his head, walked away, said something going away. I think he said, nah, that's BS. You've been BS all day. And as he was walking away, Blakeney rips the mask off and throws him out of the game. Judge, who's just he's classy, dude. He goes, look, I got a lot of respect for Ryan and what he does. I know their job's tough. I've always had their back because it's tough back there. So for it to happen that way, that's what I'm most upset about, especially late in a game like that, close game, which is just, it's absurd, man. The thin skin is getting thinner by the day.
The irony here is that 1 week from today, May 13th, will be the 30-year anniversary of the last time a Yankee captain was ejected when Don Mattingly was tossed on May 13th, 1994.
It's crazy. Absolutely crazy. So, yeah. Kids, I hope you got your money's worth, and you can tell your kids you got to see Ryan Blakeney umpire a game.
I had a little personal don't do this. You know, my buddy Scott, who I played golf with last week, he's a lifelong Yankees fan. I just got a text over the weekend. I like Soto. He's been very, very good. I saw Phil Hughes, the former Yankees and Padres pitcher, tweeting, just back up the Brinks trunk. Give him anything he wants. Give him 24-hour security. You've got to pay him. You've got to keep him on the New York Yankees. They're loving the Juan Soto experience so far in New York. All right, I talked about this. I teased this one for Don't Do This. What happened in the Cardinals-White Sox game, I believe this was on Saturday, in a fairly driving rainstorm. The White Sox came back from a two-run deficit against the Cardinals to force extra innings. But as they got to the 10th, it just started pouring and pouring. Tommy Pham, top of the 10th, drove in the go-ahead run. He's been really good, by the way.
He really has,
offensively, at least, for the White Sox. They have him out in center field sometimes, which doesn't look all that great. But offensively, he's been terrific. So it's a 6-5 game, bottom of the 10th inning. The St. Louis Cardinals are trying to score to either tie it or win it. They load the bases. They get to two outs. John Brebbia is on the mound. He struck out two. He's trying to get out of it. The rain is just coming down so hard, though, that
it's so bad
that they can't even get the ball back to him without like it getting wet. He has to like actually like physically carry the ball from the catcher to him to keep it from getting soaked so he can throw it. Gets the first strike, and then the umpires say, we got to call this. We got to go to a rain delay.
Two outs. With
the bases loaded, two outs in the 10th, an 0-1 count, they go to the rain delay. Brebbia's going, don't you dare. Don't you dare end this thing. Well, they did. They waited out 3 hours before the rain cleared, and they could come back. Now, Brebbia couldn't come back because of it. They had to bring in a relief pitcher at that point. So then they restart the game at 7:30 p.m., 3 hours after the delay started.
There's no one. There's
no
like
one left
one
in the stands.
Guy in the
stands. In a very, I mean, thrilling ending. No one's left in the stands.
Who's waiting 3 hours? No one.
If they did, they waited 3 hours for three pitches. A ball, a strike, and then the last pitch of the game, umpire C.B. Buckner called a strike on a ball that was a foot outside.
Yep.
And that is how the game ended after a three-hour delay. On a horrific strike call that the people who did wait 3 hours, the players, the broadcasters, the fans who just gutted it out to see the what they hoped would be a dramatic ending for the Cardinals at home, got to see one horrible call for their 3 hours invested.
Don't you just
a nightmare?
Don't you just have to finish it? You just if you've committed and it is dumping rain. You have to finish it, right? Don't they revert? Do they not revert anymore to the previous inning?
Well, it would have just been tied, and they would have had to start over again in the 10th. I mean, they probably should have done that. But I mean, the White Sox had the run in. I mean, you can't once the run's in. I don't know that you revert anymore. I think that's an old rule that's been changed. Whatever it was a nightmare.
C.B. Buckner, man, who was the team? I saw a clip last week of one of the broadcasters going, "He's terrible. He's always been terrible. He knows it. Everybody in the league knows it." Yeah. They just roasted him last week.
He gets a nice little skate by because Angel Hernandez exists. So C.B. Buckner's like, I may be even worse than him. I may be worse.
Oh, man. All right, finally, Tom Brady, a little
this. D.D. Mega doo-doo.
Yeah, a lot of you guys watched this. I saw a lot of commentary on this last night. I did not watch it live. The clips on on Twitter were enough. I feel like I got everything I needed. But I thought Tom Brady actually did quite a great job at getting roasted. Being roasted is not fun.
He just had to sit there and wear it for about two and a half hours before he got his chance.
Yeah, you wear it and have fun with it. And I thought he really did a good job. He's pretty good at everything he does, you know, and he's going to be fine. And you see a little bit of his personality talking yesterday. Which clip do you have, Paulie?
We got a few.
All right, fire Let's a few out. I like this.
So Bill Belichick was the surprise.
He was amazing.
And, throughout the first half of the roast, people kept saying, Belichick wished he could be here. He'd probably have something to say like this to you, Tom, or something like that. And then all of a sudden, hey, up next, Bill Belichick, and the place goes nuts. So Tom Brady got his chance to talk to his coach, his former coach.
And now, for the real reason y'all here, Coach Bill Belichick. I've been out of the game for a minute, so I'm curious. How many Super Bowl rings have you won since I left? Maybe it's not just the guy on the sideline. When I go to the Indy 500, I don't ask the winning driver, hey, who gassed up your car?
pretty good, man.
It's pretty good. Like, Tom Brady was really good, man. I mean, I know people either loved him or you hated him. Yeah, but
it's hard to hate him.
It is. You know, he still lacks some charisma, but to put yourself out there, I gave him a tip of the cap. It's funny to see him cursing, and he was probably hammered at that point. Let's see. He talked about Deflategate, and this was interesting. It sounded like a little bit of an admission of guilt years later.
We got so many great football greats here tonight, but where's Roger Goodell?
He sounds like Roger Goodell.
I know. Remember Deflategate? The NFL spent $20 million and found that it was more probable than not that I was generally aware that someone may have deflated my footballs. You could have just given me the $20 million, and I would just told you I did it.
We knew it.
Still got a couple more clips. He made a joke at Kim Kardashian's expense that she was not very happy with.
I think this was the ballsiest move of the night.
They panned it. They panned the camera over to her, and the look that she gave him was not good.
Kim Kardashian, thank you so much for being here. I know Kim was terrified to be here tonight, not because of this, but because her kids are home with their dad.
Like you have a target now. You know what I mean? Like Kanye,
your enemy number one for Kanye West.
He does not play right now. He's not well. You can't go after an unwell person, in my opinion.
And she did talk at the podium for a minute,
yeah.
But she was like sitting in at the table. She was not one of the official roasters.
Correct.
So she just was getting dragged.
Just getting dragged.
She did come up on stage and she got booed. Kevin Hart and Jeff Ross had to be like, hey. Come on.
Yeah, it was pretty. From what I saw, some of the clips were just outstanding.
I'll give you one more. This is the one that a lot of people are talking about. The one joke that made Tom Brady extremely uncomfortable to the point where he had to walk up to Jeff Ross, who was at the mic, and whisper in his ear that the mic's picked it up.
The hot mic.
I thought it was interesting. I'm like, really? Of all the things that were said, this is where we're drawing the line tonight.
That scrawny rookie famously walked into the owner, Robert Kraft's office, and said, "I'm the best decision your organization has ever made. Would you like a massage?" I love Robert Kraft. I
say
love
that again.
Okay. He's having fun. Look at him.
Don't say that S again.
Don't say it again. If you're Robert Kraft and you went to, what was the name of that place? Flowering Lotus or something. I can't remember.
In Florida?
Yeah. He went. Look, he went. He did what he did. You're on stage. You have to know. You can't go to a roast. This is off limits. You know, the time that I went and got
Orchids of Asia.
Orchids of Asia. I was close. What did I say? Flowering Lotus? Pretty close.
There's a flower. There, definitely. Now, that was really other people getting roasted. Tom got roasted as well. There were Bridget Moynihan jokes. There were Giselle jokes.
Yeah.
She wasn't there, by the way. But there were plenty of jokes about him. I thought one of the best ones was about him giving up his family so he could return to go 8-9 for the Tampa Bay Bucks his last season.
Kevin Hart, so I'm like, look. Giselle made you the ultimatum, you know, retire or I'm done. Retire or I'm done. And Tom, look, man, when you get the chance to go 8-9,
you got to take it. You got to take it every time.
Do what you got to do.
Somebody in there said Tom Brady has the personality of a potato. I don't get that. I thought he did pretty well.
I thought Gronk was great.
Gronk is hysterical.
Gronk might have got roasted more than anybody.
The jokes about Gronk were really good. Oh, I noticed Gronk's here. I should have known when I saw we were out of chocolate milk in the green room. I mean, it's nice that Gronk was able to take time away from writing letters to Santa to be here tonight. Murdered
Aaron him. Hernandez took some jokes, too. I said the bar for Gronk to be a great tight end was pretty low. Block, catch, don't murder.
Don't murder. Oh, my Lord. I mean, it's hardcore.
It was pretty hardcore.
It was cool. But then, you know, with the football guys, with Belichick, Brady, and Robert Kraft, like, there's been so much speculation and animosity reported between the three of them. They all, like, cheers, took a shot together. It was cool, man.
Yeah, Gronk spiked his shot glass and hurt a woman in the front row. Yeah, of course he did. So, I will say, the Aaron Hernandez jokes made me little uncomfortable. Little uncomfortable.
And that is Don't and Do This for a Monday.
That
was Don't Do This with Ben and Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, even before Luis Arraez got to San Diego or got to Arizona, the Padres got off to a really good start of the weekend. We'll go back through a little bit of Friday's game as well as we continue our Padres discussion on a Monday morning with more Ben and Woods next on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. Padres really had, until yesterday, a nice run of starting pitching going. Question is, can they get it back going again this week? We'll talk about Friday's performance by Dylan Cease and what the Padres are going to do going forward with Joe Musgrove going on to the injured list right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday, the Padres' first four-game winning streak of the season, and check that box off. Didn't get that until September of last year. Padres starting pitching, Yu Darvish, Joe Musgrove, Dylan Cease, and Michael King walked zero batters in four straight games.
Makes a huge difference.
Not a surprise that the Padres won all four games. Of course, yesterday, Matt Waldron walks a batter before he gets an out, and of course, Padres end up losing 11-4. So key not to give those free base runners, but Dylan Cease bounced back from the tough effort against the Phillies, just like other pitchers did, with a really good effort on Friday night against the Diamondbacks. 6 2/3 innings, three hits. Guy gives up like 2 to 4 hits every single game. That's about it. You're not going to see much more than that with Dylan Cease on the mound. 8 strikeouts, just 1 earned run. And after a bit of a slow start offensively against Slade Ciccone, the Padres broke through in the fourth inning with back-to-back home runs by Fernando Tatis Jr., Jake Cronenworth. Manny Machado hit an absolute laser beam shot on Friday night, and the Padres went on to that 7-1 win over the Diamondbacks. And that was before the whole Luis Arraez trade. They really looked solid to open that series in Arizona.
Yeah, it was a nice dub on Friday night, to be sure. And I like, you know, so many good ABs by the guys. And look, taking a series from Arizona, and they're limping a little bit, certainly, but you had to have that. I mean, you just had to have that. The sweep yesterday would have been so nails to get, but it's going to be one that eludes us, for now. Never know what can happen.
But now going forward, with Joe Musgrove headed to the injured list, it really is going to be a juggling act for Mike Schilt as to how he's going to get through this week. Yu Darvish is going to start tonight, 4:40 first pitch, I believe, 3:40 EcoWater SoCal pregame show against the Cubs. And hopefully he can throw not just as well as he did in his last start coming off the injured list, but maybe go a little bit deeper as well. I think he just went the 5 innings last time. Can he get 6 or 7 out of Yu Darvish? Tomorrow, Randy Vasquez has been called up. I'm assuming he'll get the start, although Mike Schilt wouldn't officially name a starting pitcher for the game. Randy Vasquez will probably pitch at some point. If it's not first, it'll be second, maybe out of the pen. In some way, you're going to see Randy Vasquez. And then on Thursday or Wednesday against the Cubs to wrap up the series, Dylan Cease will get a chance to go again and see if he can back that up. But we talked about earlier, the Cubs are throwing 3 very hot pitchers at the Padres this week. And even though the Padres took 2 of 3 from the Cubs, this is a dangerous, tough series for the team coming up.
I mean, back to back, bro. It's going to be, it's nasty. It's a nasty, nasty week ahead for our San Diego Padres, Benjamin. And again, hanging around is what this team needs to do. They're seemingly allergic to going over 500, but hanging around 500. Who signs up for 3-3 this week? I do.
Yes.
Right. Like, absolutely. 100%.
All hands raised.
3-3 this week would be fantastic. Fantastic.
Last time we asked for that, I think they went 5-1.
That's true. Any jelly bean bets you want to make if they sweep one of these?
You know what?
Series.
My jelly beans that I ate on Friday, I was sick the rest of the day.
Yeah.
I can't do it. I can't even risk making jelly bean bets because if I had to pay them off, I could not eat. It's maybe just as good as an SDFatLoss.com program.
Yeah,
it was the jelly bean diet. One bean, nothing tastes good anymore.
No.
It really wrecked the rest of my day. So thanks a lot for all of that, jelly beans.
Now you know.
I can't believe you ate a handful of them.
Katie wants 4-2. Hey, 4-2 is great. 5-1 is fantastic. 6-0 is even better. Trying to be realistic here, on the road against 3 of the best pitchers going right now, and then against the LA Dodgers.
The hypothetical is, would you sign up for 3-3 or take your chances at 4-2, 5-1, 6-2?
I signed that 3-3 on the nose, man.
This is a dangerous week.
It's a dangerous week, and guys are down, and, you know, you're talking about juggling things, and it just, yeah, I take that.
I take that 3-3. Cubs took 2-3 from the Brewers in a very big series for them, so they're tied for first in the NL Central. Craig Counsell getting the best of Pat Murphy in that series. And the Dodgers just swept the Braves.
Yeah.
They've won 11 of 13. Shohei Ohtani hit 2 more home runs. He's now tied for the league lead with 10. He's red hot. You're catching both of these teams just like you caught the Phillies, who, by the way, have continued to do what they did to the Padres going forward. They had that one blip against the Angels that they lost, but they've won 9 out of 10, 16 out of 19. Bryce Harper hit a 3-run home run Sunday Night Baseball as they completed a sweep of the Giants. That kind of sort of explains last weekend's series a little bit. The Phillies are just insanely hot right now. They go through these periods. We saw it in the postseason, early in the postseason last year. Then they'll inexplicably cool off for a while, and you go, what happened to the Phillies? Why aren't they playing well again? That is one of the hotter, colder running teams that we've seen the last couple of years. When they're hot, they are unbeatable.
No doubt.
But when they're cold, it's like, right, they can't score. Nothing happens. You know, they lose to the Arizona Diamondbacks the last three games in the National League Championship Series. But they are hot right now. Dodgers are hot. Cubs are hot. And that's who the Padres have to face coming up this week. Now, going back to Friday, I believe that was the game again that the Diamondbacks, was it McGuff that they brought in at the end that dusted Fernando Tatis Jr.?
It's spelled like McGow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Magoo. But he came in late. Game was already out of hand, and once again, Fernando Tatis Jr. ends up in the dirt, on his butt.
This one was
after a pitch that comes high and in. And
that was close.
He took a second to get up. He did not look super pleased.
While, yes, we will even acknowledge as Padres fans that Fernando Tatis Jr. sometimes overreacts to the normal inside pitch with the way he dodges and gets out of the way.
I've said it before. I'm glad he does. It's a defense mechanism, and some of the guys that don't actually bend are the ones that wear it where? On the hands. And if the hands go, you're toast. So I overreact, be dramatic, whatever you want to do. That ball was 95, 96 to the face.
He's gotten a lot of them. I saw the pitch dots upside. I mean, there's like been 11 or 12 of them.
Yeah.
That have been in the general vicinity of his head this year.
And I saw, you know, a lot of people saying, well, this kid, this is who he is. He's wild, man. He's wild up in the zone, and we've seen it before from him. Okay, fine. Both things can be true, that your pitcher can't really corral his heater, and that you threw at our superstar up and in, intentional or not, again. And again, let's make no mistake. If you're a starting pitcher, Benjamin Higgins, and Fernando Tatis is at the dish, you know what to do. Bust him in, go away. Hard in, soft away. This has been going on in baseball for 100 years, right? We know that. It doesn't make it any better, because if he does end up wearing one, things could happen. You know, bad things could happen.
The question now is, what, if anything, are the Padres going to do about it? Because we really haven't seen anything yet, although Mike Schilt did at least address the issue verbally after Friday night's game. Do we not have that audio?
No, we don't.
I thought we did have that audio.
No, we have his quote.
We have his quote. All right. Do you have his quote?
Yes.
Give me his quote, then. I thought we had the audio.
No. His quote was, after Friday night's game, we're seeing way too many pitches up and in on Tati. It's enough. It really is enough. If you want to throw in, that's fine, but I don't know what people are trying to accomplish by throwing up and in. All you're doing is pissing the guy off, and it's uncalled for. It's happening way too frequently, and it's not something that we're going to tolerate much longer.
I told him this at spring training, that had been an issue the last couple of years, and you know, he said they're not going to tolerate it. But so far,
they've tolerated it.
I think it's been tolerated 11 times, so was it lucky number 12?
It's like you and your kids. You say you won't tolerate.
I'm not going to tolerate.
But then you
this.
Tolerate.
Yeah, you tolerate. And it's just interesting to me, because it's not, in my opinion, something that ever should have to come from a manager. It should never have to come from a manager. There should be someone on that team, in that rotation, in that bullpen, that says, don't worry, I got it. Steven Kolek, great dude to go do it. You know, like, seriously. Adrian Morihone, who just throws gas. Just buzz a guy's hip. You know, do something to let him know, we got your back, kid. Now, it's nice, I guess, to hear your manager, hey, you guys do this 15, 16 more times, you're going to be in trouble. I mean, it's been a baker, you know, almost a baker's dozen of him, you know, getting up and in. But again,
until they actually do something about it, it's lip service.
You do have to pick the right moment, though.
You do.
It has to be fairly clear why you're throwing at a guy.
How about like in an 11-3 game or whatever?
It has to be after Tatis gets dusted. You can't just do it 2 days later just announce that this was for Tatis getting dusted.
And you don't announce it. You just, oh, ball got away from me. I don't know what happened.
Right, but it also has to be clear why you're doing it.
Oh, it's painfully clear why you're doing
it. Would have been clear if they had done
Who's their superstar?
Saturday. I don't know. Who is the Diamondback superstar?
Corbin Carroll?
He's their eighth hitter hitting like 180.
Ketel Marte.
Ketel Marte is the hottest hitter. And they don't have a superstar as the
Christian
problem.
Walker. I mean, just to let him know, hey, man, we got it too. You know, you always hear Mudd say, we've got that pitch too. And then my immediate response to the TV in real time is, do we? Because I hear it a lot, and again, if I'm Fernando, it's not like you're gonna walk into the clubhouse and be like, is anybody gonna have my back? It's just an unspoken, unsaid. Baseball has always policed itself. We have no cops on our team. If baseball is policing itself, we've got no cops on our team. And I'm actually bummed Mike Schilt even said a word about it. To be honest, I just think you don't say a word. You just do it. You know, you just do it. And let them know we've got that too. You know, but it just hasn't happened yet. And I'm not calling for an all. I don't want to see anybody get hurt. I don't want to see an injury. You know, our luck, you know, somebody will break his hand and be out for 6 months. You know, but there is a way to do it that hurts no one and lets you know, hey, man, that's not. We're not cool with that. It's just not going to happen all year.
Now, I don't know that it stops it from happening, even if you do throw inside or throw back at the other team. I mean, if they can get Fernando Tatis Jr. out, it's worth them to continue doing that. And Tatis is going to have to continue to make sure that they know that even when you do that, I'm still going to, you know, pick the right pitches to swing at, and it's not going to make a difference. Right now, he's been swinging at some sliders on the outside corner that he's been missing at. And, you know, as long as that happens, I don't think they're going to change strategies at all.
I wouldn't.
He's tough enough to get out as it is.
Yep.
And this is the one way they feel like they can do it. So probably going to see more of it. All right, we're halfway home. Reset everything. Come back next year on The Fan. Padres really had, until yesterday, a nice run of starting pitching going. Question is, can they get it back going again this week? We'll talk about Friday's performance by Dylan Cease and what the Padres are going to do going forward with Joe Musgrove going on to the injured list right after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday, the Padres' first four-game winning streak of the season, and check that box off. Didn't get that until September of last year. Padres starting pitching, Yu Darvish, Joe Musgrove, Dylan Cease, and Michael King. Walked zero batters in four straight games.
Makes a huge difference.
Not a surprise that the Padres won all four games. Of course, yesterday, Matt Waldron walks a batter before he gets an out. And, of course, Padres end up losing 11-4. So key not to give those free base runners. But Dylan Cease bounced back from the tough effort against the Phillies, just like other pitchers did, with a really good effort on Friday night against the Diamondbacks. 6 2/3 innings, 3 hits. Guy gives up like 2 to 4 hits every single game. That's about it. You're not going to see much more than that with Dylan Cease on the mound. 8 strikeouts, just 1 earned run. And after a bit of a slow start offensively against Slade Ciccone, the Padres broke through in the 4th inning with back-to-back home runs by Fernando Tatis Jr., Jake Cronenworth. Manny Machado hit an absolute laser beam shot on Friday night, and the Padres went on to that 7-1 win over the Diamondbacks. And that was before the whole Luis Arraez trade. They really looked solid to open that series in Arizona.
Yeah, it was a nice dub on Friday night, to be sure. And I like, you know, so many good ABs by the guys. And look, taking a series from Arizona, and they're limping a little bit, certainly, but you had to have that. I mean, you just had to have that. The sweep yesterday would have been so nails to get, but it's going to be one that eludes us, you know, for now. Never know what can happen.
But now going forward, with Joe Musgrove headed to the injured list, it really is going to be a juggling act for Mike Schilt as to how he's going to get through this week. Yu Darvish is going to start tonight, 4:40 first pitch, I believe, 3:40 EcoWater SoCal pregame show against the Cubs, and hopefully he can throw
not just as well as he did in his last start coming off the injured list, but maybe go a little bit deeper as well. I think he just went the five innings last time. Can he get six or seven out of Yu Darvish? Tomorrow, Randy Vasquez has been called up. I'm assuming he'll get the start, although Mike Schilt wouldn't officially name a starting pitcher for the game. Randy Vasquez will probably pitch at some point. If it's not first, it'll be second, maybe out of the pen. In some way, you're going to see Randy Vasquez. And then on Thursday or Wednesday against the Cubs to wrap up the series, Dylan Cease will get a chance to go again and see if he can back that up. But we talked about earlier, the Cubs are throwing three very hot pitchers at the Padres this week. And even though the Padres took 2-3 from the Cubs, this is a dangerous, tough series for the team coming up.
I mean, back to back, bro. It's going to be, it's nasty. It's a nasty, nasty week ahead for our San Diego Padres, Benjamin. And again, hanging around is what this team needs to do. They're seemingly allergic to going over 500, but hanging around 500. Who signs up for 3-3 this week? I do.
Yes.
Right. Like, absolutely. 100%.
All hands raised.
3-3 this week would be fantastic. Fantastic.
Last time we asked for that, I think they went 5-1.
That's true. That's true. Any jelly bean bets you want to make if they sweep one of these?
You know what? My jelly beans that I ate on Friday, I was sick the rest of the day.
Yeah.
I can't do it. I can't even risk making jelly bean bets because if I had to pay them off, I could not eat. It's maybe just as good as an SDFatLoss.com program as the jelly bean diet. Eat one bean, nothing tastes good anymore.
No.
It really wrecked the rest of my day. So thanks a lot for all of that, jelly beans.
Now you know.
I can't believe you ate a handful of them.
Katie wants 4-2. Hey, 4-2 is great. 5-1 is fantastic. 6-0 is even better. Trying to be realistic here, on the road against three of the best pitchers going right now, and then against the LA Dodgers.
Hypothetical is, would you sign up for 3-3 or take your chances at 4-2, 5-1, 6-2?
I sign up for 3-3 on the nose.
This is a dangerous week.
It's a dangerous week, and guys are down, and you know, you're talking about juggling things, and it just, yeah, I take that.
Cubs,
I take that 3-3.
Cubs took 2-3 from the Brewers in a very big series for them, so they're tied for first in the NL Central. Craig Counsell getting the best of Pat Murphy in that series. And the Dodgers just swept the Braves.
Yeah.
They've won 11 of 13. Shohei Ohtani hit two more home runs. He's now tied for the league lead with 10. He's red hot. You're catching both of these teams just like you caught the Phillies, who, by the way, have continued to do what they did to the Padres going forward. They had that one blip against the Angels that they lost, but they've won 9 out of 10, 16 out of 19. Bryce Harper hit a three-run home run Sunday Night Baseball as they completed a sweep of the Giants. That kind of sort of explains last weekend's series a little bit. The Phillies are just insanely hot right now. They go through these periods. We saw it in the postseason, early in the postseason last year. Then they'll inexplicably cool off for a while, and you go, what happened to the Phillies? Why aren't they playing well again? That is one of the hotter, colder running teams that we've seen the last couple of years. When they're hot, they are unbeatable.
No doubt.
But when they're cold, it's like, right, they can't score. Nothing happens. You know, they lose to the Arizona Diamondbacks the last three games in the National League Championship Series. But they are hot right now. Dodgers are hot. Cubs are hot. And that's who the Padres have to face coming up this week. Now, going back to Friday, I believe that was the game again that the Diamondbacks, was it McGuff that they brought in at the end that dusted Fernando Tatis Jr.?
It's spelled like McGow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Magoo. But he came in late. Game was already out of hand, and once again, Fernando Tatis Jr. ends up in the dirt, on his butt.
This one was
after a pitch that comes high and in. And
that was close.
He took a second to get up. He did not look super pleased.
Yes, we will even acknowledge as Padres fans that Fernando Tatis Jr. sometimes overreacts to the normal inside pitch with the way he dodges and gets out of the way.
I've said it before. I'm glad he does. It's a defense mechanism, and some of the guys that don't actually bend are the ones that wear it where? On the hands. And if the hands go, you're toast. So I overreact, be dramatic, whatever you want to do. That ball was 95, 96 to the face.
He's gotten a lot of them. I saw the pitch dots upside. I mean, there's like been 11 or 12 of them.
Yeah.
That have been in the general vicinity of his head this year.
And I saw, you know, a lot of people saying, wow, this kid, this is who he is. He's wild, man. He's wild up in the zone, and we've seen it before from him. Okay, fine. Both things can be true, that your pitcher can't really corral his heater, and that you threw at our superstar up and in, intentional or not, again. And again, Let's make no mistake. If you're a starting pitcher, Benjamin Higgins, and Fernando Tatis is at the dish, you know what to do. Bust him in, go away. Hard in, soft away. This has been going on in baseball for 100 years, right? We know that. It doesn't make it any better, because if he does end up wearing one, things could happen. You know, bad things could happen.
The question now is, what, if anything, are the Padres going to do about it? Because we really haven't seen anything yet, although Mike Schilt did at least address the issue verbally after Friday night's game. Do we not have that audio?
No, we don't.
I thought we did have that audio.
No, okay. We have his quote.
We have his quote. All right. Do you have his quote?
Yes.
Give me his quote, then. I thought we had the audio.
No. His quote was, after Friday night's game, "We're seeing way too many pitches up and in on Tati. It's enough. It really is enough. If you want to throw in, that's fine, but I don't know what people are trying to accomplish by throwing up and in. All you're doing is pissing the guy off, and it's uncalled for. It's happening way too frequently, and it's not something that we're going to tolerate much longer."
I told him this at spring training, that had been an issue the last couple of years, and you know, he said they're not going to tolerate it. But so far,
they've tolerated.
I think it's been tolerated 11 times. So was it lucky number 12?
It's like you and your kids. You say you won't tolerate.
I'm not going to tolerate.
But then you
this.
Tolerate.
Yeah, you tolerate. And it's just interesting to me, because it's not, in my opinion, something that ever should have to come from a manager. It should never have to come from a manager. There should be someone on that team, in that rotation, in that bullpen, that says, "Don't worry, I got it." Steven Kolek, great dude to go do it. You know, like, seriously. Adrian Morihone, who just throws gas. Just throw, buzz a guy's hip. You know, do something to let him know, we got your back, kid. Now, it's nice, I guess, to hear your manager, "Hey, you guys do this 15, 16 more times, you're going to be in trouble." I mean, it's been a baker, you know, almost a baker's dozen of him, you know, getting up and in. But again,
until they actually do something about it, it's lip service.
You do have to pick the right moment, though.
You do.
It has to be fairly clear why you're throwing at a guy.
How about like in an 11-3 game or whatever?
It has to be after Tatis gets dusted. You can't just do it 2 days later just announce that this was for Tatis getting dusted.
And you don't announce it. You just, "Oh, ball got away from me. I don't know what happened."
Right, but it also has to be clear why you're doing it.
Oh, it's painfully clear why you're
doing it. It would have been clear if they had done
Who's their superstar?
Saturday. I don't know. Who is the Diamondback superstar?
Corbin Carroll?
He's their eighth hitter, hitting like 180.
Ketel Marte.
Ketel Marte is the hottest hitter. And they don't have a superstar is the
Christian
problem.
Walker. I mean, just to let them know, "Hey, man, we got it too." You know, you always hear Mudd say, "We've got that pitch too." And then my immediate response to the TV in real time is, "Do we? Do we?" Because I hear it a lot, and again, if I'm Fernando, it's not like you're going to walk into the clubhouse and be like, "Is anybody going to have my back?" It's just an unspoken, unsaid. Baseball has always policed itself. We have no cops on our team. If baseball is policing itself, we've got no cops on our team. And I'm actually bummed Mike Schilt even said a word about it. To be honest, I just think you don't say a word. You just do it. You know, you just do it and let them know we've got that too. You know, but it just hasn't happened yet. And I'm not calling for an all. I don't want to see anybody get hurt. I don't want to see an injury. You know, our luck, you know, somebody will break his hand and be out for 6 months. You know, but there is a way to do it that hurts no one and lets you know, "Hey, man, that's not. We're not cool with that. It's just not going to happen all year."
Now, I don't know that it stops it from happening, even if you do throw inside or throw back at the other team. I mean, if they can get Fernando Tatis Jr. out, it's worth them to continue doing that. And Tatis is going to have to continue to make sure that they know that even when you do that, I'm still going to, you know, pick the right pitches to swing at, and it's not going to make a difference. Right now, he's been swinging at some sliders on the outside corner that he's been missing at. And, you know, as long as that happens, I don't think they're going to change strategies at all.
I wouldn't.
He's tough enough to get out as it is.
Yep.
And this is the one way they feel like they can do it. So probably going to see more of it. All right, we're halfway home. Reset everything. Come back next year on The Fan.